Hello, friends. This episode definitely has donuts on it. We had a bag of crullers, little mini crullers from Hostess. The problem is they were so unremarkable that they weren't worth talking about. But you know what is worth talking about? Artifacts 9. You're listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening. I'm John Grigas.
And I'm Josh Crawley.
And we are all about the Artifacts number 9 today.
Oh, yeah. Sexy time.
Yeah, definitely the sexy time issue. Artifacts 9 came out last Wednesday. We hope that you had a chance to pick it up because we are going to be spoiling a good amount of the story. However, you still need to pick this up. Regardless of anything that we talk about, it does not replace the experience or the information you're going to get from reading this book. So please pick up the issue, or if you're waiting for the trade, that's cool. Definitely pick up the trade. We're going to talk about the elements that are really awesome about this issue, but we're not really going to tell the story of this issue. First, we want to thank our sponsor, Westfield Comics. Westfield Comics is on the east side of Madison on Williamson Street. You got to stop by and check us out. You can also do business with Westfield Comics at www.westfieldcomics.com for a nice 20% discount and 2-year door service on subscription orders and some recent back issues. There also is a west side location of Westfield Comics, but come on and see us or do business online. Artifacts 9 came out last week, Josh, and it's been a long time coming, but now we have a new artist. Jeremy Hahn joins the lineup.
And it is, for me, a welcome addition. I'm not quite a fan of Wiles Portacio's more recent stuff, and
I think Wiles was pretty kinetic in his action. He was definitely real sketchy, and I found Jeremy Hahn, because here's the thing, I have not really seen much Jeremy Hahn until this issue, and it's kind of a logical artist to bring in after Michael Brassard and then Wiles Portacio. I think that the art is very complementary to both of those artists, but
yeah,
a little more towards the Brassard area of things, yeah. I thought.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the stuff of his I'm used to seeing. Not that I've read a lot of the stuff that he's done, but it's a little scratchier. I mean, I still like it. It's great. I think he tells the story well. And man, that first opening spread is gorgeous.
The first opening spread really is. It as is the rule with a Top Cow book, the first page gives you everything you need to know to read the story that's inside. So here's the other thing. If you haven't been reading Artifacts and you want to pick it up with number 9, you're not lost completely, because they do a great job of summarizing the story so far in that first page. But it opens up to a double page splash of the world, I guess, as it used to be before our world existed.
Yes. I was trying to think of some cool Masters of the Universe way to say it, but I wasn't working. Wow, I can't even talk right now. Yeah, it looks all, you know, futury, utopian, but it's the past.
And it was definitely described as a utopia, which is kind of unique. It's a lot of skyscraping buildings, a lot of really futuristic sci-fi kind of concepts that we're familiar with. Hover cars and other vehicles riding around. And
it's more fantasy sci-fi than hard sci-fi.
Definitely not like Ray Bradbury sci-fi or anything like that, but floating cities and that kind of sci-fi. So, and it's in fact on a floating dwelling that we see the survivor with his family, and we kind of come back to really early on where the survivor talks about the only creatures or beings he ever really cared about was his wife and child. And how life was a utopia. They had peace, they had harmony. But he also references that the 13 artifacts did exist as a factor in the universe, as a driving force. And somehow, they believe, the society came to believe, that if they put all 13 artifacts together, that it would just solidify their utopia, and actually the opposite took place.
And something, I don't know if anyone else has picked up on this, and I did, and I kind of, I think, rationalized it to myself as well. There haven't necessarily always been, say, the same 13 artifacts, but maybe this does tell us there always are 13 artifacts.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't really...
Because figure the Witchblade was born from the darkness and the light. We don't know when, what reality, etc.
Right. So the 13 artifacts, however they existed in this previous civilization, came together and basically caused the end of the world as they knew it. The survivor identifies himself as the bearer of the DNA that allows the universe to... basically, the DNA of the universe that existed is encased in one individual, and he's the DNA of that previous universe, and also identifies that since then, there is a new person born that has the DNA of the current universe that happens to be Hope Bazzini.
I was going to say we're going to give people three guesses, and if they don't get it, they're have big issues. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. Never mind.
Well, it seems pretty clear that, you know, and he may be wrong in this, actually, but...
True.
Seems pretty... He is assuming that the DNA makeup of the universe we're existing in, where the current 13 artifacts exists, is in the fabric of Hope Bazzini, and therefore she must be sacrificed, and somehow the logic goes that if he sacrifices Hope, then his universe gets restored.
Yeah. Well, because this universe's DNA would have no chance to restart, so it would have to choose the next available, which would be his. Or some such, I'm assuming, is the logic there.
So then my
question... Works for me.
Here's where I'm kind of struggling. It works for me because I'm willing to accept it and go for the ride. But if that was the case, then how wasn't the survivor's DNA enough to just regenerate what he had going before?
He wasn't with the artifacts when the previous reality was destroyed. Whereas if he has them and controls them, as best as one can control 13 forces of nature, anyways.
All right.
After all, right there, he's strong enough to pull people's hearts out. Well, not their literal hearts.
Yeah, obviously. So that takes us to the next scene. We're back to the survivor. He's given us all the backup stories about his origin. And we have Abby, the necromancer, is, if we remember earlier in Artifacts, she is restrained and bantering, and then somebody comes out from the woodwork, and it turns out to be Mally, who is a demon of his own. And frankly, I don't know enough of the necromancer storyline to know who Mally is or how he relates to Abby.
It's been so long since I've read that story that I can't be of much help right now. That being said, anyone that's more interested could pick up the handy-dandy necromancer trade, and we will include a link to that in the show notes or something.
That will be for sure, and actually before Artifacts 10, we should probably check that out and talk about it some more.
That means I got to find it.
Because I'm real interested in it now, so that works out good.
I just don't know where it is.
Now, is it still in print?
I'm going to say I'm 89% sure it is still in print.
All right. So that works. So Mally comes out, and he is obviously familiar with the survivor, who's also familiar back. And in one quick motion, as Josh referenced before, the survivor drives his fist into each of their chests, both Abby and Mally, and pulls out two halves of the Heartstone. So one more artifact is united and made whole. And from there, he inserts it into what looks like some large arachnid-shaped exosuit of some sort that he seems to be assembling these artifacts into.
Some random Asian god device. That was the first thing I thought of, was kind of, you know, more Eastern mythology. Lots of arms.
And it's really interesting, as you look through this, Ron Mars is really he's not skipping anything as far as the mythology and the religious background goes, because you have a lot of Catholicism that still is themed through this. You've got some of the Mayan and Eastern mythologies that come in through this. It's kind of interesting how it all rolls together. But then it rolls out, and I guess we're getting now to the part of the book that everybody's really going to talk about most. And we catch up with where Sarah and Jackie are. So the Witchblade and the Darkness are on their own. They've branched off from everyone else, and they're looking for Hope Bazzini, their daughter. And all I can say is the Jackie's Darkness characters kind of get a little tipped off before we even are. He says Boss is going to get some, and there's a little sexual tension, there's a little romantic tension between them, and it opens up to probably one of the more surprising two-page spreads that Top Cow's had in the last few years, where Jackie and Sarah, I guess they kind of bridge any gap and make a connection, I'd say.
Is it really any more shocking, though, than the few pages in the Angelus miniseries?
You know, I was going to say, if you enjoyed the Angelus miniseries, you're going to also enjoy Artifacts number 9.
Sarah has some adorable underwear on. Well, I don't know if adorable is the word. It's pleasant.
Sarah has pleasant underwear. Sarah's underwear doesn't stick around very, very long. There is some, I'd say, some graphic art, and then there's one frame in particular that seems like it might have been edited out to not include some details that you might expect to see. But suffice it to say that Jackie and Sarah really consummate their connection. It's been clear for this whole Artifacts thread, really, that Jackie does it for Sarah. We've talked about it before. Gleason may not trip her trigger quite like Jackie Estacado does.
Gleason's probably not going to Chicago. Jackie can get to Chicago pretty quick. I just realized, what if Tim's writing Darkness after Phil Hester leaves?
Well, that'd be interesting.
Huh.
And where does Jackie land?
Wherever. He can travel through shadows.
He's kind of nomadic anyway, isn't he?
Yeah.
That'd be worth watching. I'm okay with this connection and everything. The one thing, I felt it seemed a little abrupt. It didn't... I don't know that it made sense. If your daughter is kidnapped, I would think that you'd be so obsessed with that you wouldn't take as much time as they took out for satisfying their urges as much. I don't know.
Well, let's be honest. It might not have been that quick or that long.
Whatever it was, it was intense. It lasted a good three pages, really.
It
solid
was quality
pages.
Not quantity.
It was quality, and it was interesting. I know that there's been a little controversy about it, but for the most part the press has been positive, I guess. That also cuts over to where we meet up with the wielder of the 13th artifact. Tom Judge and Tilly Grimes and the Angelus are trying to convince the bearer of the 13th artifact, who is Zhi-Z, I guess, is the only way I know how to pronounce it. They engage him. He also warned, don't bother me anymore, and he starts to fight with them. But the voice of reason becomes Tilly Grimes, which I really liked how her character was written. And she seems to diffuse the situation a little bit to where they can kind of discuss things through and see what's going on. She finds a way to disarm the 13th artifact so that he'll at least give him a little time and listen to what they have to say.
Tilly's good like that. The level-headed one in a massive non-team team of people that can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, I want to know more about Tilly Grimes. I gotta go back and read some more. And I'm looking forward to more of her in the Artifacts Ongoing, which seems like it's going to be centered around the Rapture and Tom Judge. And she seems to kind of go hand in hand with Tom Judge anyway, so.
We could even have less Tom Judge and more Tilly. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I'll be on with that. I was impressed, and kind of a lot of chances for this character. It's kind of interesting. Sarah and Jackie believe they know where Hope is. There's a cliffhanger at the end where they basically make a leap of faith to go where they believe Hope might be, and that hits with our to be continued to the 10th issue.
Bum, bum, bum. And this issue's, what are those called again? Origins? Or Origin?
Yes.
Origin, Wheel of Shadows. It's J.A. Fonseich doing the artwork.
Which is great, because this is an example of his artwork that isn't the digital painting that he usually does. This is penciling and inks of Stefan Sejic.
Nope. It's digital painting.
Okay. Well, the only reason why I said that is because they said in the back that it wasn't.
That was back in issue 3. He did pen and ink.
Oh, you're right.
Pencil and ink stuff. Yeah. They're just recapping all the artists that have added to the awesomosity.
Oh yeah, you're totally right. Now that I look closer at it, yep. But it is, it's interesting getting the origin of the Wheel of Shadows, because I don't know that we know a lot about the Wheel of Shadows outside
of
just Sabine becoming that. And it's interesting to see, they say that the wheel's power gives Sabine mastery over time itself. Time speeds or slows at her whim, but she can never travel back in time to regain what she has lost. So she can control the passage of time, but she can't go back in time.
Unless she gets a DeLorean.
Yeah, I guess. Now that's a crossover. It's the Artifacts Back to the Future crossover. So it'd be interesting to see. I really think that she might play a bigger role than I first expected.
Yeah. Hope's little right now. Hope could grow up. Hope could die. That's one thing I haven't seen mentioned in all the going to Chicago stuff, is what's up with Hope.
Yeah.
Of course, it's kind of tough to say much about any of that when you're like, oh, hey, look, we have this giant event going on.
Right.
Yeah. Most people might die. We have to say pretty much nothing.
You definitely have to keep silence about Hope at least until you get to Artifacts 13. So that makes sense. After that, we have where the House of Cards issue was, or the House of Cards feature was. We have the Artists of Artifacts, a 3-page profile of the different artists we've had featured through the Artifacts series so far, starting with a write-up on Michael Brossard. One thing that I thought was interesting in the write-up of Michael Brossard is that they called his artwork as having been done on Top Cow's flagship title, The Darkness. And if I had been asked what the flagship title of Top Cow was, I totally would have thought it would be The Witchblade.
Huh. Yeah, I got nothing.
So I don't know. Now, I wonder if the darkness is going to have a bigger presence in Top Cow universe moving forward than the Witchblade has. I mean, or that also could be, you know, it is a major title. I'd say it was hand in hand with Witchblade, and they do have the video game coming out in February, so.
Well, maybe the darkness is the flagship to the franchise that is Witchblade. Like the Harbinger. The darkness is the Harbinger flagship of the Witchblade.
I don't know. It's going to be real interesting. Once Witchblade passes 150 and we move on through and Artifacts passes 13, it'll be interesting to see what goes with both of those titles after
I'm
Tim
guessing
Seeley
they weren't
takes
expecting
over.
Us to look into it quite that much.
Yeah, but we have a Top Cow podcast. Of course we got to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Then, moving through, they talk about Wills Portacio, Joe Weems V, Jeremy Hahn, who just kicked off his run. He'll be doing Artifacts 9 through 12. Sonny Goh, who has been the colorist for Artifacts 1 through 12. So I don't know if he'll be coloring number 13 or if somebody else will take duties there. And they talk about Stefan Sejic in Artifacts 0. One thing I thought was interesting is the phrase they said, if Ron Mars is considered the architect of the Top Cow universe, Stefan is his lead designer, which is pretty accurate. He's had a major impact on the characters we see moving forward.
Definitely. And design, yeah, a large chunk of the, well, visual look of a lot of that stuff for 3-4 years plus.
It's definitely been building up to this point. So we hope that you pick up number 9. If you don't pick up number 9, we hope that you're going to be picking up Artifacts Trade Paperback number 3. And when you do, no matter when you listen to this or no matter when you read that, give us some feedback. We'd be really interested in what you have to say about it. We can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/donutsandtopcow, and that's DOUGHNUTS.
Oh, did we get one of those fancy, we don't have to have the piles of numbers in there things now?
Yeah, I think you can just go to that and...
Okay.
I successfully did so anyway.
I think you have to have a certain number of likes or something, so yeah, I think we passed that.
Hey, woohoo! Thank you so much if you happen to like us. And
rate us on iTunes.
iTunes ratings are important and appreciated. Thank you so much for that. And you can follow us at DTC Podcast on Twitter, or you can check us out individually. I'm JG Madison W on Twitter.
I'm Josh Crawley, JOSHCRAWLEY.
And Josh is a lot more active than I am, but it's hit or miss. It's kind of fun. And we also have some contests coming up, so listen up, because next episode and also on our social media feeds, we'll be giving the details of how you can win some really cool Witchblade action figures. We also have a special signed issue that was donated by a listener, Russ Hagen, over in the United Kingdom. And we appreciate that. You can also email us your thoughts at dtcpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Good journey.